Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
We're proud to have this damn good dog as part of the Fan family. Time to talk college football with Matt Stinchco. Presented by Georgia's own credit union, Anderson Power Services, AAA, and ASW Distillery.
Stinch, how are you today, sir?
Man, I'm fired up. Down here in Jacksonville, thawing out for the Gator Bowl.
Starting to get to that good point of the bowl season where we get some really, really good games. No doubt everybody's expecting to see at least one great game tomorrow. And we're going to talk about Georgia and Ohio State, obviously. But before that, I've been on this Michigan and TCU game where I just think so many people are underselling what TCU can actually do here.
Yeah, you may be right. Of the two, I find that to be the lesser compelling matchup, that's for sure, but obviously not alone in that assessment. But when you've got a playmaker at quarterback like TCU does, and a guy that was worthy of Heisman consideration, and certainly was, incidentally. I mean, I know a lot of people were decrying who the Heisman Trust finally arrived upon their final four, first time I think in history that they limited it to just four finalists. Then you always give them a chance, there's no doubt. And the way that TCU has gone about winning games this year, where it's not like they just sprint out to leads and hang on, you know, all our fun little metrics, the game control metrics. Boy, they hate TCU because they don't control the game until the very end, but that's when it matters the most. So they are kind of a lay-in-the-weeds type of a team, and they insist on making things a little bit more interesting than absolutely necessary. But, boy, that sure adds to the drama, right? And given the lousy playoff games that we are typically treated to, I'm kind of hoping that there's some level of intrigue or at least competitiveness in some of these playoff games, because, you know, typically what do we get? We usually just get these lopsided blowouts and maybe get a good championship game, but the playoffs have not been good to the postseason really since its inception in 2014.
No, they haven't. And one of the things that, Matt, when you look at it, is not only have they been a lot of blowouts, but teams have struggled to, at times, like get to 30 points, which is what's interesting because you got this great high-powered offense of Ohio State versus this great Georgia defense. Reminds you a lot about the Tennessee-Georgia matchup, and we all know how that ended. But I've said this, this game feels like more of a tougher matchup personnel-wise for Georgia than it would be for TCU or Michigan. Do you see that the same way? Do you think that this is a tougher first-round draw than what would be potentially a national championship matchup versus a Michigan or TCU for the Dogs?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think so. I mean, of the teams that Georgia could have drawn, you're inclined to think that, especially, you know, how do we view games, right? We rarely look at the defenses. It's almost always the offense that you're facing and can they score points. It's kind of the lens that we view all games. Not much scrutiny being placed on the Ohio State defense necessarily, and that's true of almost all matchups. And because of that, you look at Ohio State, especially at their skill positions, and you're going, who's probably the most threatening? I don't think it's any argument that it would be Ohio State. Of the potential three opponents in the playoff, you would think that Ohio State would be the most challenging for Georgia. And I think it's their ability to not only throw, but even propensity to throw haymakers, but also to land them. And you look back at the games that Georgia's played this year, there haven't been many that were threatening. I mean, the Missouri game being the closest, and I think that was more of a function of how Georgia played in that game more so than the threat level that Missouri posed. I mean, part of it was they're just sleepwalking through a kind of a lackluster game day environment, and they seem disinterested for the majority of the game. They're not going to be disinterested versus Ohio State, but when you think about their ability to hit shots, especially downfield, and really to kind of lean that way, you know, we've got Notre Dame today in this Gator Bowl, and Notre Dame had them in the opener, and Al Golden was talking about, you know, you face a team like Ohio State, and your biggest concern is, you know, can you survive the shots that they're going to throw at you? And you know that they're not going to go away. It's going to be for four quarters. They're just going to keep, you know, sending some over the wall. It doesn't matter. They're swinging out of their shoes. And so can you keep them in front of you? And that was their mindset. You know, Georgia's got different personnel, so they can do both. And I do think that there's a chance that they can keep two safeties out and still handle the run. They've been able to do that largely throughout the season. I don't know that, and we'll see. I think that there'll probably be a key component in the game if the scoreboard doesn't get away from Ohio State is, you know, can Georgia control the run without having to add numbers? And if that's the case, then you're certainly able to help out your coverage, which takes away some of that deep play threat that we've seen pop up from time to time. That seems like the only way that you can kind of move the ball. You're not going to just possess the ball and convert first downs up and down the field versus this Georgia defense.
A good buddy, Matt Stinchcomb, joins us here on 680 The Fan. He'll be on the call today on ESPN, 3:30, the Gator Bowl, South Carolina, Notre Dame. Matt, what does another national championship for the Dogs do for – how does it elevate Kirby's legacy?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly accelerates it, doesn't it? It's a pretty sporty legacy already. Outside of a 2016 season, which, you know, first time you're sitting in that head coach's chair, you're talking about a pretty sporty resume and one that you are continually contending for championships. If you can contend for a conference championship in the SEC, then you've got yourself a chance to contend for a national title. The conference is, it's not a birthright. It's not like at the beginning of seasons, you just say, well, if you win the SEC, you're in. No, but the seasons have proven repeatedly, and the level of competition has as well, that if you can emerge from this conference as a champion, then you warrant college football playoff consideration. Even seasons when you don't emerge as a champion, Alabama's done it, Georgia's done it. It's definitely warranted opportunity to contend for a national title. And Kirby has kept Georgia in that conversation and, you know, contended for one and won the other. And it seems as if, you know, chalk holds. He's certainly positioned his team to contend for another championship. He's a victory away from being able to do that. It's been one heck of a run. You're talking about two seasons of near dominance, and that's not an easy level to achieve. I mean, there's only a couple of programs that can speak to that. You know, Clemson's on the fringe of that conversation. Alabama is at the center of it, and I'm not so sure that, you know, Georgia is very closely orbiting at this point what Alabama, from a standard of excellence and consistency, has been able to establish at the program level. Just not an easy thing to do. And it's only getting harder with all this transfer business.
Now, speaking about two seasons of dominance, you saw where Jalen Carter said his ankle's finally 100% healthy. As a former offensive lineman and quite a good offensive lineman, how do you go about defending a guy like Jalen Carter?
You just, you know, set them tight and hope you're right. He's an all day sucker. I mean, it's hard to, I think, capture the guy's impact on the game. You know, people talk about defensive ends and, you know, how they can change the game because they can pressure the passer. And, you know, I agree to an extent. If you can win the way Jalen Carter can win on the inside, that's way more valuable. From a pass rush standpoint, way more valuable. And he's able to do that. And when I say that, he's not winning one-on-one. And you can't game plan to double-team a guy, especially inside, and especially as multiple as Georgia is. But it will be incidental where he'll end up, you know, there'll be two guys, right? You'll have a center guard help or a guard tackle help on Jalen Carter, or even – in play action looks, there'll be three layers of protection. And I've seen him repeatedly defeat three blockers and get to the quarterback with the ball still in his hand. And as quickly as the ball's coming out, you're going, that's remarkable. That's like that's shape shifting. That's being able, you're here one second and you're somewhere else the next. That's a big body. And for him to be able to do that, as disruptive as he is, and when he's fully engaged, because a guy that talented, at times can look at maybe a little bit less than interested, and then he flips the switch right back on. I hadn't seen that, since the Missouri game when he got nicked up. Ever since he's been back, there hadn't been a lot of games or moments where you're going, I don't know, guy's probably, he looks tired right here. Can't even look tired. He's been, I'll say that he reminds me of guys that nobody will remember, but, guys like a Darrell Russell, where you're just going, if this guy don't want to get blocked, you're not going to block him. And that's it. Some guys are just gifted that way, and some develop that talent on top of it, and Jalen Carter's done both. If he's not the number one prospect coming out in the draft, I would love for someone to point out who is, because no one's been more dominant this season.
Yeah. Matt, I think this is interesting. Just when you think that Stetson has proved everybody wrong, whether you get on social media or what, there are still people out there that hate, or whatever you want to call it, don't believe, haven't fully embraced Stetson Bennett. But can Stetson play himself into a NFL draft pick in these next two games, or do you think he already is there?
I think he warrants a pick now. I really do. It's just, we've seen other guys that are taken with a much less compelling resume. And I'm not talking just wins, losses. I'm talking about if you just watch the guy play. Now, I've talked about this a couple times this year. We had them early in the season. Full disclosure, and I've been on the record, even last year where I was, speculating, I don't know, maybe it's time, maybe, JT needs to get back in there. He had the first, three games last season. And there was a few moments last year, and especially I know a lot of folks after the SEC championship game just screaming from the rooftops, got to make a change. It's got to be it. Which, at that point in time, with that level of body of work and the competitiveness and frankly, ruthlessly efficient way that Georgia's like, we're here to win football games. You heard Todd Monken talk about it. This isn't, we're not over here, making friends. Nothing's promised to anyone. You're competing for time every week. Every time Stetson Bennett goes out there at quarterback for Georgia, that just means he's earned it and has continued to earn it. And he's done it on a team that's pretty talented and has got some really good football players. So you have to think that he's among the best. He is. The people that are naysayers at this point, like, I don't know what it is that you're looking at other than height, I guess. He's taller than Bryce Young. So it's just it's kind of a curious evaluation. All that to say, we talked to Jim Nagy, who's over the Senior Bowl and has a pretty strong background in pro personnel, worked for the New England Patriots, among other franchises in the NFL. And he did an evaluation, and he didn't even hesitate. Really, like, absolutely. This guy's not only warrants pro consideration, but would warrant a pick in the draft. So I don't know, to answer a long answer to your simple question, is I don't know that it's even the next two games. I think he's already done it, and I don't know that you undo that in two games. It'd be really disappointing in the evaluation process if he did. Because the body of work is an impressive one.
Okay, Stinch, we know you got to get out of here. So I've got one more question. I'm going to make it a two-parter here so we can both kind of get these in here. First of all, if Amarius Mims has to make his first start of his collegiate career against Ohio State in the Peach Bowl, what's that like as a former offensive lineman who at some point had to make his first career start? And also, you're doing the Gator Bowl today. What does it do for Spencer Rattler if he comes out and he beats in succession Tennessee, Clemson, Notre Dame?
Yeah, so the Mims thing, Georgia's done a really good job of getting him in there, and he's gotten not just meaningful reps, but he's in there, the third series, I want to say, on average. It felt like, I don't know if it was a preset rotation, but it always felt like you saw Mims early in games, and it wasn't like go in there, get a series, and then maybe we get you back in. He's consistently rotated in and through. And so I think that takes kind of the newness off because of that. And, you know, my freshman year, I remember I rotated in. And, you know, just because you're not the first one out there, you know, if you're in there and you're getting your decal smudged a little bit and the school board's still lit up and it's still contentious, then, you know, playing's playing. And so I don't think that it's as big of a deal for Mims if, in fact, he does go out there first. The way that they've handled the tackle rotation, I think that it won't be that new for him. I don't know how wide-eyed he'll be because of that. So there's tons of advantages for Georgia having done that that way this season. As far as Spencer Rattler's concerned, you know, he's really embellished on what was a shaky season, especially the last couple of ball games. You think about what was it, the 6-touchdown game versus Tennessee, which came literally out of nowhere. We had them versus Florida. South Carolina scored 0 offensive points. They looked horrible and lost, I think, 38-6 to Florida. And it was just an abysmal offensive performance. Next week, 63 points versus the then, whatever they were, 3, I guess. What was Tennessee ranked that week? Can't remember. Doesn't matter. They dunked on them. So, and then you get a victory versus Clemson. If nothing else, within the Gamecock Nation, I think it certainly solidifies maybe his positioning there. Not that there's any threat, I think, at quarterback. But, you know, this wasn't a fantastic year for Spencer Rattler. It was, in fact, kind of an overly conservative one. And when he finally kind of cut loose and started trusting his playmakers on the outside, they started making plays. It would be interesting to see if he maintains that mentality later on today versus Notre Dame. But it certainly helps because an 8-win season, that's a rabbit out of the hat for this South Carolina football team. You can't say enough about what Shane Beamer and that staff did because there wasn't a ton to work with, and it was somewhat turbulent from an availability standpoint. So Spencer Rattler finished strong, needed to, because it wasn't a great start or even middle to the season, but he got hot late, and we'll see if it keeps it up.
And every conference needs their villain. Shane Beamer can be that, and so can South Carolina. Thanks a lot, Stinch. Hope you have a great time and a great game for the Gator Bowl. So I know it's always a lot more fun when you get a great game to call.
Yeah, so far the bowl season's given us that. We're counting on one.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, guys.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.